the Booz Dancing Entertainment Network is live, live, live. Hi, guys. How are we doing?
Good. Good, good, good.
We are good.
I'm chock full of snacks.
He's chock full of snacks. Well, that's a good thing to be chock full of because we have a very, very special live show tonight. We are live tonight on what, YouTube and Facebook and where, Twitter?
And LinkedIn.
And LinkedIn. And I think we might have a job posting. You know, we're looking for a secretary.
I'm looking for an editor. I need an editor.
So that's on the boozdancing.com LinkedIn page. It's going to be fun tonight. We have a very special hour or so of a friend to the show. And we'll talk about that in a moment after we get this thing off the road. On the road? On the road.
Let's get the What We Watch When We Drink intro rolling.
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 Welcome to What We Watch When We Drink, a Booze Dancing Entertainment Network podcast featuring lively discussions about movies, TV shows, and anything else that we're watching while we drink our favorite boozy beverages. If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com, and if you have any questions, comments, show, or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
We are back. That was wonderful. Aho! So tonight we've got a special, special night. We have a guest with us tonight, and we are going to talk cocktails, but mostly we're going to talk about food. And you know, you guys, I know you guys like food, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mike, what's your mantra, Mike? What's going to be on your tombstone?
I'm going to die full. That's my mantra. Everybody's got to die of something. I'm dying full.
That's a great mantra. I'm going to get a t-shirt. I might have that draped over my coffin.
No, he's got that copyrighted. You better have a good lawyer.
Oh, man. That's
Mike
good.
Is very litigious. Very litigious.
So we're going to talk to a friend of the podcast, friend of What We Watch When We Drink. I think this is his 37th appearance. Is that right? Don. I think he just passes Don Rickles tonight.
Don?
I believe. Or maybe passes Charo. I'm not sure. One of the two. But we're setting a record here. Our guest tonight is a friend who's a writer, a cocktail specialist, a music specialist. Gosh, he's got lots of titles, doesn't he? I'd say guru, but that's apparently a bad word to say these days. You can't say guru anymore.
Can't say guru?
No, guru's like bad. It's like really? No one likes, I don't know. No one wants to be a guru anymore. It's like, it has a negative connotation. So we are welcoming in Andre Darlington, who has a new book that has just hit the book places, I believe, yesterday, and is called Bar Menu, 100 plus drinking food recipes for cocktail hours at home. He's also the author of a couple books that we've talked about before, Booze and Vinyl, Booze and Vinyl 2, Booze Cruise, and the Gotham City Cocktails. Is that what it was called?
Yep, Gotham City Cocktails.
And the new cocktail hour and TCM movie night.
And then there is, don't forget, Booze and Vinyl, the game.
The game. That's right. This man is prolific.
I don't know how he does it.
Well, we're going to find out because we're going to bring him in here a second, right?
Let's roll Andre's intro. All about intros. All right, let's do it. He's here, Andre. Andre.
Ooh, yeah. Andre Darlington is in the house.
Can I get a rally towel? I need a rally towel.
I'm so glad I beat Charo.
Oh, there was a debate because Charo was on the Christmas special. I'm not sure that really counts, but that was a long time ago. Andre, welcome.
Thanks for having me back again, you guys. This is fun. What interview is this with you? At least four or five, maybe, right?
I think this might. Well, let's see. We did Booze Cruise.
Yep.
We did Booze and Vinyl 2. We had you on with Yay Your Spirits. Yep.
Oh, that's right.
So this is the fourth.
This is four. Yeah.
One before.
Wow. This is great.
Nice. It's a grand slam.
It's a grand slam. You just, the book just got released yesterday.
Yes. Correct. Bar Menu. My eighth book.
Eight.
Wow. Eight.
Wow.
So prolific.
Getting up into the, we'll be double digits here pretty
soon. Yeah. This is a crazy year. There's three books this year. So Booze and Vinyl 2. Then there's John Wayne, the official John Wayne cocktail book. It's a little late, so it comes out November 7th. So this technically is book, November 1st, that one. So technically this is book 8. But But the exciting news, first cookbook.
Yay! And we like food. You have a lot of food in the other books too.
Food in every single one of them. I try to put in a few things in every chapter. Certainly the Turner Classic Movies was quite food heavy because, you know, movie menus, you know, there's lots of food in there. But it's not really a cookbook. This is sort of the first cookbook. So this one is, you know, over 100 recipes and then like 30 cocktails. So it's kind of flipped upside down. Normally I have not even 30 recipes, maybe something like 15. So this was a fun one. This is a book I've been wanting to write for years and crafted behind the scenes with my agent. Like, how do we get there? How do we get there? And now we're here.
So maybe we start with that crazy topic first. You've been writing about drinks.
Yeah.
A long time.
Yeah.
And now you're writing about food in a cookbook, in essence, right? What's the difference between writing a cookbook and writing a drinks book? Is it just, oh, they're just liquid recipes instead of food recipes or solids? Is it? It's not that. It's more. It's different, right?
It is different. Cocktails are really, they're actually quite difficult to master, the cocktail recipes. They're more persnickety than you think. There's nowhere to hide in them, right? As you guys know, you can probably, if you know, you've been looking through, rolling through a number of cocktail books, you can kind of look at a cocktail book and be like, I can just tell from reading them that it's not going to be that great. Where food books hide themselves a little bit more, right? You can buy a book and by the third recipe, which of course takes you an hour instead of 5 minutes to make, you're like, oh, maybe this cookbook isn't for me. So all I'm saying is there's a lot less going on in a cocktail book, it looks like, but they're kind of certainly a specific thing to master. And then food, wow, it'll take you downtown. I mean, writing food recipes, just the algorithm of how you're going to describe how you're going to make food. The food is a thing. Each house kind of has a way that they want you to do that. So there's a number of different styles. So I kind of had to learn quite a bit doing this book, even though, thank God, I had written a number of recipes before. But after finishing this book, which kind of gave me a master's degree in writing food recipes, you know, I've gone back to some of my other books and been like, I had no idea what I was doing. Now I know what I was doing. I think I got, you know, lucky. Some recipes are, you know, they all go through an editor. So they all go through the meat grinder and come out well. But this one certainly was a lot. I think in the back of my mind, I'm not sure I'll ever have as much time to write a book as I did for this one. This one spanned over 2 years during the pandemic. So actually I had started it before Booze and Vinyl 2, but the publishing house wanted to put Booze and Vinyl 2 out this spring really badly. So I dropped this book for like a year, wrote Booze and Vinyl 2 and came back to it, which I thought was going to kill me because, you know, you sort of get into a headspace and then it's hard to get back in. Like it's like making a movie and then shelving it and then trying to get the actors back together. But in fact, it did kill me. But also,
but you're here.
Yeah, I'm here.
You survived.
Also, that made the quality, I think, go up in a way that I could add so much more. I'd gotten the ball rolling. I had time to think about it. It was just a longer gestation period. So this is a biggie. I mean, it's a huge, it's not that, doesn't look that thick, but compared to the books that are coming out on the market, which do a lot of trickery with page numbering and whatnot. There's just a lot of recipes in here. I mean, you guys page through it. There's a recipe every page. So it's like well over 100 recipes, which is pretty bonkers. And I try to cover the whole globe and I try to cover history. And so there's a lot of jam-packed in there. I felt like I wanted to write a magnum opus for bar menus. So that's what we ended up with.
Is the organizational process of putting a cookbook together different than putting a cocktail recipe book together? Are you thinking differently?
For sure. And one of the things that I knew I wanted to do from the get-go on this is I have a lot, just from writing all the other books and being in the industry, I have a lot of entertaining books. Boy, do I have a whole shelf of appetizer books. Boy, do I have a shelf, you know, pairing this and that and the other thing. And so many of the cocktail food books that I have go by like canapé versus main, cold app versus hot app. They're like, they read like they're from the 19th century. I can pick up a book from 1890 and it'll be like separating small canapes from large dishes, cold apps from hot apps. And people are still doing that like 100 years later. So I was like, no way, man. I want to have a book that reads more like a cookbook. You can drink with this book or not, but this is going to have a bunch of different cool stuff. So I followed much more a taxonomy of just a straight up cookbook, meat, cheese, poultry, you know, so that you can pull off the shelf and be like, I have chicken. What should I do? And that's not normally how I do the cocktail books at all. In fact, I was one of the first people to be really against going by base spirit just because it doesn't tell a story. And it's like, oh, I have a handle of vodka. Let's go to vodka page, because you can go to the internet to do that, right? So I don't really do my cocktail books that way. But this book, I really wanted it to be like, if you're a drinker, you want this on the shelf and you're like, I want it to be a nice reference. You know, maybe I want to make a meatball, wear meatballs. And that's kind of the direction I went with, because some of these projects get handed to me, and then other projects I sort of dream up. And this was much more, I took this one to the edit for the publisher, and it's the book that I can't find, right? So my favorite books that I've written are the books that you can't find. No one has a book that looks quite like this. I'm frustrated by my other books on my cookbook shelf. There's an Italian section and there's a Japanese section. And, you know, I've sort of, you know, typically we break up cocktail books or food books by, you know, geography or whatever, maybe by alphabetical order, by author, however you do your taxonomy at home, you do. If I want to have a cocktail party, I'm like, oh, Jean-Georges has that fun, like, that thing. And then, you know, Andrea Nguyen has those dumplings. And I was sort of like pulling all these, you know, books together. So I really wanted one, you know, food book in one place. So that's the hope.
On that note, one of our pre-discussions, our pre-interview topics was we were all going to go through the book and pick out a cocktail and a snack or something to make. And we were going to talk about it each here on the cast.
Like a potluck cocktail hour.
I love it.
A potluck cocktail hour. Excellent. That's going to be Andre's next book. So who wants to start with maybe a cocktail? Should we start with a cocktail first? So who made what? Andre, you probably didn't make anything, right?
I've had a busy week. Book came out yesterday, so I am having a little whiskey.
There you go. Mike, what'd you make?
I made the Planner's Punch.
Yeah.
Ooh. Can't go wrong.
Nice.
What's in it?
3 ounces of rum, 3/4 ounce of simple syrup, 3/4 ounce of fresh lime juice, a bar spoon of grenadine, 3 dashes of Angostura bitters, and 1 ounce of club soda.
You had all this stuff?
I had most of this stuff. I was surprised, which is why I picked the one that I picked, because I actually had some of this stuff.
Bravo.
I wanted to make one of the other ones, and I was like, ooh, I don't have orange bitters. I can't make that. Rats.
Okay. Punch is a great.
Pretty good.
You must be maybe a secret Planner's Punch if you have all that stuff already.
Ange, what'd you make?
The recipe that I picked, which I didn't have a lot of time, so I just picked something quick. The suggestion was either a mint julep or an old fashioned.
Nice.
So I went with an old fashioned.
Nice.
Nice little drink. And I used the Milam and Green rye.
Nice.
Very nice.
And, you know, the little Luxardo cherry and a little orange and a little sugar cube, some water, a little bit of orange bitters, and a nice clear ice cube.
Nice.
Very good. So. And I made the Ward 8.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Awesome.
And the ice is melted, unfortunately. I made it a while ago.
What's in the Ward 8?
2 ounces of rye. 1/2 ounce of lemon juice and orange juice, a little grenadine, and a couple cherries. And it is wonderful. I actually made a little more than one, and I had the other half earlier. So delicious. Love nice. It.
Andre, what's the whiskey?
Double rye from, who are the guys?
High West.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, that's a good one. I was going to make the old fashioned with the High West.
Oh, nice.
But then I saw that they had the Milam and Green up front. So I was like, I'll go with that.
Cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
I love that you guys did the Planner's Punch and the Ward 8. I feel like those are drinks that have both dropped out of view a little bit. Certainly the Ward 8, you know, is sort of came out around the same time as the other Burroughs cocktails, sort of known for being a prohibition drink. And when I first ran into it, I didn't really understand it. And I actually made it quite a lot made a bunch of different builds for it to try and sort of figure it out. And then I'm not sure it's a matter of figuring out so much as it's just great with other things.
Yeah. I've only had it in bars. I've never tried to make one. Not, it's not hard at all. Yeah. It's very simple.
I'm surprised you didn't go with the Big Chief.
Which is the Big Chief?
2 ounces of bourbon, a half ounce of Averna, a half ounce of Punames, and then an orange peel for garnish.
I could have done that. I could have.
That sounds like a wheelhouse.
I was really in the mood for old fashioned.
Yeah.
I was really in the mood for old fashioned. So that this works for me right now.
And I wanted to make the Antrim cocktail.
Oh yeah.
Which is an ounce of cognac, an ounce of Tawny Port, a quarter ounce of simple syrup, and 2 dashes of orange bitters. But I didn't have any orange bitters.
Ah.
You could have called me. Probably would have mattered, but I was like, well, I didn't want to buy. I didn't know what you were doing today. He lives right behind me. I could have knocked on the door and, may I borrow a cup of orange bitters?
Sure. I got them.
I love the cocktails that were in this. I thought there's something on every page for somebody.
Oh, great.
It feels like a cookbook that's enhanced by cocktails. So, yep. You know, it's not a cocktail / cookbook. It's a cookbook with cocktails.
I misread the book. I thought I was supposed to drink the cocktails while I was cooking, and things went horribly off the rails today. I don't know what happened.
There was no instructions, and I understand your problem.
The third cocktail, there were flames everywhere. I don't know what happened.
Could be a liability issue.
Put the mask on yourself first before you have a cocktail, then start cooking.
All right. So, Andre, let's talk about where this whole concept came from for this book. I think we're all kind of in the same age group, and we probably all had a similar upbringing in terms of our parents having parties at home and what that entailed back in the 60s and 70s and 80s. Talk about how those experiences in your life brought you to this book.
Behind the scenes, the book started in an interesting way. It was during the pandemic, and I thought, you know, we've come so far in our craft cocktails that it's not just the drinks. The bar food has come so far. You know, when I was starting out, probably, you know, when we all started drinking in bars, it was just fried food. You never saw a vegetable. You hardly saw anything interesting.
Nothing green.
Nothing green. You went to the bar, you got Chex Mix, right?
Chips.
Basically, and chip made
peanuts.
Yeah, and so things had come so far. So I said, we're all missing going out to a bar. Let's do a book that's sort of homage to some of these, this great bar food. And there's a couple of those still left in there. There's a kombu from Bar Gocho in New York. There's a couple other spots that I mentioned. I certainly a spot in New Orleans, the eggplant fries are from that. But overall, the spirit of the book is sort of growing up with these formal cocktail parties before the craft cocktail revolution. And then the flip, where we get the craft cocktail revolution, but the cocktail party at home dies. And so, or dies or just changes. So the argument in the book is that we might, you know, I wrote a book called The New Cocktail Hour. And this is sort of, could have been called The New Cocktail Kitchen. The idea that things have really changed. We don't just have, you know, chicken salad on cucumber slices anymore. We have, although those are good, and I just had them at a party not too long ago. But we, you know, we've moved into a lot of spice and certainly a lot of international flavors. And so I've seen the cocktail, you know, the cookbooks of the last 15 years, you know, from Alangi to all the many, like, you know, Fire Island to these incredible, you know, there's been an incredible explosion in regional cookbooks from around the world. But really, ultimately, what it's brought in is a lot of new ingredients and a lot of new geography and a lot of spice. And same has happened in cocktail bars. And I'm not sure that they get noticed for that so much. You know, I think just the way the industry is, if you're a restaurant reviewer, you so often just focus on food, right? You're not sitting at the bar noticing, oh, hey, we have, you know, a lot more interesting things than ever before. I'm not sure I've ever seen a restaurant review specifically mention shishito peppers, why they're everywhere, why they're so good, where they came from. So I wanted to explore that kind of stuff. In this book, I'm kind of exploring what's happening at the bar, what's happening with the food. We know that cocktails have become chefy, but there's food that's going along with these chefy cocktails at the same time. There's something happening here. And it's a big discussion to have. This book certainly isn't the end of that discussion, but I just wanted to get it started.
I think our current taste buds would look back at our parents' cocktail parties, dinner parties, and the word that would come up would be bland.
Yeah.
We didn't have a lot of flavor. We didn't have a lot of spice. There probably was a lot of salt and a lot of pepper, but that's about it. And an overriding theme, I think, in this is powerful flavors and international flavors,
yeah,
which is is awesome because that's where I live
it's
now.
It's fun,
and right? It's fun. Yeah.
So all of the cocktail books that I have, let's say before the mid 70s, they do some world flavors, but it's always like Mexican dip, right? It's
right.
Or like
seven layer taco dip.
Bland eyes, you know, recipes. And we've gotten away from that now. I hate the word authenticity, but we've definitely gotten to the point where if you have, a Oaxacan restaurant, you expect Oaxacans to be behind it because you're not just recreating that food. You know, so I wanted to have that represented in this book too, because I feel like appetizer cookbooks have really lagged in that. They've stolen some things from other cultures, but they still kind of Americanize and blandize things. And I was like, why don't we just go straight to the source? What's wrong with having momos from Nepal? We can make them at home. There's cookbooks that have them. I don't need to say, oh, you know, there's this purse from the, you know, this sort of purse, beautiful dumpling from Nepal, but just make it with cream cheese and curry powder, you know?
I think this book is sort of an extension or a coming home from Booze Cruise.
Yeah.
So Booze Cruise, you are all over the world and you're bringing all kinds of flavors and recipes, cocktail and food to us, but you're actually in those places.
Right.
And here we're all assuming we're all here in America and we're bringing these, all of those flavors you've experienced outside of this country, and you're putting them here in this one place, which I think is just wonderful.
Yeah, it's true. It's really an extension of the travel. And also I think the way I cook and a lot of other people cook, where they'll get like, let's say, you know, a magazine arrives at your house that is featuring Taiwanese food. You might cook through all the magazine, you know, that whole magazine, and kind of bring some of those Taiwanese things home into your own kitchen. And this is a little bit like that. Like, hey, here's India. I've cooked a lot of Indian food. I've been to India. Here's kind of the things you should know as a cocktailer from India. And also the things that if you're in India, new cocktail bars are bringing in to the bars. It was fascinating going around the world because each of these cultures, they're getting these craft cocktail bars. And then they're sort of deciding what in their own culture goes with cocktails. It tends to be stuff that we recognize. It's very unctuous, very salty, crispy. We love the same things all over the world with cocktails. We just don't know what all those dishes are. I've just to elaborate on that a little bit. I remember landing in Bangkok and going to a wonderful bar called the Tet Bar, which plays live music. But then also it's a craft cocktail bar, but they're known for being very Thai, right? It's very Bangkok. And so you go and sit down and you get the peanut and lime leaves. And the peanut and lime leaves with your cocktail. And I had this kind of wonderful epiphany. Like, you know, I could have sat at the Carlisle Bar in New York City and I would have gotten cocktail nuts. This is exactly the same thing, but they're using, you know, their Thai chili and lime leaves and peanut. And so that's kind of the experience I was hoping to bring back a little bit.
2.5 years ago, we all start this crazy life indoors, and there becomes this like movement within homes all over the world to cook more at home and to make cocktails more at home.
Yeah.
And more experimentation. People, I think, experimented more with things in the last 2.5 years at home, making cocktails they'd never made. They would just go to a bar to make a cocktail. Do you see that as a impetus towards cookbooks and your book? Because the way the world has changed a bit?
I think so. For sure, for the last 2 years, I'm sort of keeping an eye on what's going on this year. This year, from what I've seen, is that the average person going into the bar, I think their knowledge base is higher than it was. We've had some, especially in big cities, we've really seen sort of this prosumer walks into a bar. And since the pandemic and the hiring problems, and since a lot of the older generations of bartenders have moved on, we're actually seeing, you know, instances where the people sitting at the bar may have almost equal experience or more experience than the people behind the bar. So it's been an interesting summer that way. But I do think it's true. I also think just the high prices of restaurants and stuff, people are going back a little bit. We'll see what happens this winter. I feel like the cocktail season really kicks off kind of now. We certainly get a big spring push, But I feel like cocktails in the U.S. really have kind of a wintertime, thing for them. It's the holiday parties that kind of do it. And then what I call January-March, where everywhere in the North, you know, you stay home and drink some cocktails. But I think that it's true. I think that there is a huge kind of like home movement again, which is really exciting. And I think it helps push bars. You know, bars can't be as lazy as they were. I think before the pandemic, we sort of started drifting back into like, you know, not even fresh juice anymore and that kind of thing in bars. You see it sometimes. And now it's like, no, we got to be good again. Or why are people going to show up?
We also talked about in our pre-interview about making a recipe or two from your book. What did you guys make out of the book and why'd you choose them? Mike, what'd you make?
I made two things. I went out and I made the deviled cashews, cumin, coriander, turmeric, pepper, cayenne pepper, salt, butter, sugar, and cashews. They're really good. My better half was like, do you need all of these for the show? Could I eat some of these? Because they're pretty good. And then I made the almond date and fig balls. So I held up what looked like a meatball, but they're not meatballs.
Yeah.
I got an almond date and fig ball. It's sugar, ground cinnamon, toasted almonds, dried figs, and pitted dates. So you take the almonds, figs, and dates, you mash it into basically just a paste, and roll them together, and then roll them in the sugar and the cinnamon. And they
that sounds
out.
Delightful.
And they come out like this so when you make giant size ones like me.
Hey, I'm grabbing my laptop. Really I'm walking over, Mike.
They're really good. The doors are locked. I've released the hounds.
Oh, I'll get in.
Wow, that sounds great.
And I'm a big fan of figs. My wife said I actually made the inside of a fig Newton.
Oh,
which you know that's high praise.
That's kind of what it is. So
like, yeah. Love a fig Newton. Love a fig Newton.
Carb free fig Newton. Yep. Born here.
Yeah. Yep. Ange, what'd you make?
I didn't have a whole lot of time. I was in the office today, so I made the American cocktail pecans.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
Something simple, something easy.
Yeah.
So it's, what was it? 2 tablespoons of unsalted butter, tablespoon of Worcestershire, 2 cups of pecan halves, 1/4 cup of Tabasco, 1/2 teaspoon of kosher salt, and 1/4 teaspoon of freshly ground black pepper. So melt the butter, throw everything in the pot, coat it, stick it in the oven. Good stuff.
Boom. Easy.
The other thing that I'm guessing you're getting this with the pecans, there's quite a kick from the cayenne.
Yeah.
So the cashews, they're like, ooh, they're good. And then, ooh, boy, they're throwing something in there. I don't know if you're getting the same thing with the Tabasco with the pecans.
No, it was a very, very small amount of Tabasco. So it's just enough to give it some flavor.
Good. Really good.
I could have probably gone spicier, but they were really good. I like these.
How about you, Aaron? What'd you make?
I made 3 things. I started with the crunchy North African chickpeas.
Yes.
I love chickpeas.
Awesome. Same here.
And it's so easy. Now, I have to admit, I cheated because I didn't make the ras al hamout. I actually have a jar of it, so I didn't need to go through and make the whole thing by myself. And they are so yummy. This is going to be a go-to. This is so easy. It is so, so freaking easy. And which reminds me, a question I want to ask you, Andre, was, are these recipes things that you've made before, or did you come up with these recipes for the book?
A little bit of both, but the vast majority of them I had made before. So like you, I love chickpeas. I started seeing them in bars, and I sort of start chasing those themes. I chased shishito peppers for a while because that's all in the technique. I sort of say in the book, the only difference between a good shishito pepper and a bad one is not the flavor that you add, but how well you know how fresh they are and how you blanch them. Chickpeas are very much the same. If you do them correctly, they're wonderful and crunchy and light. Done poorly in like, you know, a lot of times restaurant, you know, not a lot of times, but every once in a while a restaurant, you know, maybe their oil isn't hot enough or whatever. And it's kind of, you know, they're kind of heavy. So it's all in the, you know, all in the prep. But yeah, a majority of these I had in some form or a trick up my sleeve or over the years, had kind of developed. And then some of the recipes, just the round out chapters, I found stuff occasionally. I do a lot of cooking. I'm a real,
you can tell.
My first love. And I really do love entertaining. It's been a while since I've been able to entertain, of course. Now that everybody's double vaxxed with everything, we can get back to it. But
well done. The other item I made, second item I made, was the is it pronounced kombu? Kombu, yeah. Cucumber?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Embargo.
This is and so freaking easy.
Yep.
All it is cucumber and sesame oil, soy sauce, and furikake.
Yeah.
And this house.
What was that last thing?
Furikake.
What is
and
that?
It's a Japanese multi spice
condiment
based
condiment,
with
yeah.
condiment with primarily based with sesame seeds and seaweed, and then there's variations of them.
Mm.
There's lots okay. of lot, there's a few brands of them, and they're have different applications. Some are for rice, some are for fish, some are for eggs, and it's a standard in my house, and we have probably 4 or 6 jars of various ones in the house all at all times. So this was, it's so freaking easy. It's
is nuts. It just like a quick marinade?
It's not even a marinade. It's a powder, and you just sprinkle it on stuff.
Okay.
Yeah,
right. That's it.
And then for the dish, you just kind of like add a little vinegar, right, and away you go.
It's so easy. It's just amazing.
And these are all things that'll make you want to drink more.
Yeah, it's great with sake.
I think that's true. Yeah.
That's the beauty of salty food, right?
And the third thing I made, which I think Andre would be, hopefully he's proud of me. Because it's a work night. You can't do everything on in a short period of time. I made the a version of the, I gotta find it here. The hold on one sec. It's the meatballs. Where is that? I had the page and it's gone now. It's the where is that?
The turkey
meatballs.
Oh, yes.
But I used, because I didn't have time to make meatballs, I used the Beyond Meatballs, Beyond Meat Meatballs, and made the sauce and cooked and baked the meatballs and then broiled them to kind of toast them a bit.
You did all this tonight?
I did. They are amazingly delicious. I mean, I would have went on camera, but you don't need to see that. They are so freaking good. It's so simple. I mean, making the meatballs as is in the recipe would be just amazing, but as a quickie, this was just great. And as I said earlier, my family is just, I'm sure there's no leftovers anymore. That's the bottom line.
It's all that sauce, so, right? It's amazing how,
yes,
it's amazing how easy it is.
By the way, Andre, what I really love, like I'm reading through, like, you know, your pairings with cocktails and snacks, and you get to the very last part, and it's like, look, worst case, make a sour.
Yeah.
Because everything goes with a daiquiri. I like it.
It's kind of a existential difference because we, are still kind of in the three things on the plate, four things on the plate. Each thing on the plate does something different. And so many cultures are this one dish is the mother dish. It does everything you want. It's acidic. It's spicy. It'll take you to the prom and feed you on a trip. It's this thing, and it's like, oh my God, this food, it starts to be an arms race, right? Because like, how do you, how do you fight something that's like, sort of like Lao noodle kimao plus, right? So you, if your food has so much flavor, what is your cocktail there to do? So a lot of Asian bars go really big and really acidic. But the truth is that you can always make a daiquiri. And a daiquiri, if you think about it, is also the sun, moons, and stars in one drink, because
right.
it's got the acid in there, and then it's balanced out. It's got sugar acid, so a daiquiri is very much like an Asian sauce you might put on noodles. Obviously, doesn't have the umami and all that stuff, but if you think about it, it is just doing a sweet and sour.
Can you do the same thing with, like, let's say, like a whiskey sour?
Yeah, yep, whiskey sour.
I mean, that'll work.
That could have been a good one too.
So when you were putting the recipes together, I'm assuming you made every recipe, probably more than once. You're going through the process, you're fine-tuning it. You probably went through a few versions of each one of these, correct?
Correct.
I can't imagine your kitchen, but I can imagine your kitchen because I want to be there every night.
With the pandemic, my poor girlfriend, Janine, who Angelo knows.
Poor Janine. Oh, poor Janine has to eat all this food.
Yeah.
God.
Actually,
poor Janine.
Pretty good time. You know, I would have fry week and then 2 weeks later have fry week again. You know, we got to do everything fry in the book while the oil's because it's such a thing. And there is a fair amount of fried food in the book. There's quite a bit of everything. We'd have like kind of rice week too. Like, let's make rice and make everything out of the rice. There were certainly recipes in here that I really took me a long time. And then the other recipes, they're sort of born out of the box, and they were great the first time, and we recipe tested them again. It's a mix. So for instance, I could take one example apart. I've been chasing a really great fried cauliflower forever. Since I had gobi manchurian, which is sort of a, in theory, it was a dish that was made in India while Chinese were working on the railroad in China. So it tastes Chinese, but is actually Indian. It's just basically, a battered and fried cauliflower. Harder to do than it sounds. And also, I didn't really want gobi manchurian. So that dish has been done a number of times over the years. And I actually kind of settled on a gobi, sort of an Indian spice inside, and then gochujang on the outside to provide this sort of like wallop of interesting sauce flavor. So there's a few of them in the book that are like that, where I've been chasing this particular recipe for a long time. And then there's just silly stuff like the buffalo supplì. So supplì, sorry to all Italians, you know, supplì are these little balls usually filled with, often filled with cheese, which they call, I think, like telefonos, because the cheese is like a string of a telephone. And you get them in Rome. I have Italian relatives. They would make them. And I decided, let's put some Frank Red hot sauce in them and Americanize them, just to give every Italian Nona heart failure. But it worked. It's so ridiculously good. And I'm not a huge fan of Frank's Red Hots anyway, but it's something we all know from wings, which are a huge American bar food.
Yep.
And I thought, well, this is the application to use it in. So there's some things where just like lightning struck at some point, and it's sort of, in a way, it's my sense of humor. I do like to do that. And also, I feel like that's what American bars do. And that was one of the fun things about the last 15 years in bars, is you would see stuff like that. Let's make comfort food, but let's do something that's like, oh, and now something a little different from a completely different culture, throw it in there, mash it up, and you have a real hit. And I'm always looking for those things that, you know, on the first bite, the whole cocktail crowd is like, you got to go back to the table and you have to get that, because it's ridiculously good. I'm not even going to tell you what's in it. You just have to eat it. So I'm always looking for stuff like that.
For those just joining us, this is Booze Dancing TV Live, and we are talking to Andre Darlington, author of the new book, Bar Menu, which just came out. And I assume you can get this pretty much everywhere where you can buy books. Where can you get this, Andre?
Yeah, Amazon, all your favorite independent bookstores. Tell your libraries to carry it. You can get it. You can go out to the press and look at their page of everywhere to get it, from Barnes & Noble to really anywhere.
And as usual, we all talk about this often, the layout of this book, like all your other books, is just beautiful. It is so well laid out.
I have been so lucky. This is the same designer that designed all of my other books for Rolling Press. So the same gentleman, Josh McDonald, who did Booze and Vinyl 2. He didn't do the TCM book, but he did my first book, New Cocktail Hour. He did this book as well. We had an incredible photographer and an amazing stylist. So you're asking me about recipe testing and what that was like. This stylist, with one assistant, did the entire book over 4 days. Wow. Hats off to her.
Holy crap.
4 days?
Yeah, I think we shot this in 4 or 5 days.
So you made all these recipes that got shot.
Yeah.
In 4 days, they took pictures of everything.
Yeah.
Here's a picture that has nothing to do with a recipe. It's just a picture. It's such a pretty picture. I want to move on. It's a pepper shaker, drinks, and a radish. I really like the picture. Where I got to go back in the book. I got to find this now. I mean, that's what you've done. The book is so pretty.
A woman named Kelsey Windmiller in Philadelphia. And she had the idea to do these really arty chapter openers. And I fell in love with them immediately. You know, we're taking pictures of the food, getting the food all perfect. And then in between that, we would make these like really whimsical sets and sort of play around like, what does cheese look like next to this knife and that kind of stuff. And it really raises the level of the book. I wanted this book to be very colorful. Because the food book, I wanted it to be really vibrant. That was sort of the only direction that I had. Let's get a lot of color in there. Let's have it be really youthful. And I think they knocked it out of the park on this one. The food is just amazing. You know, a lot of books have, you know, picture, then, you know, recipe, picture, then recipe, picture, then recipe. And the designer said, came to me and said, you know, we can put a lot more pictures in if we just bang these out and put them in the chapter openers. Mm-hmm. Here are the color backgrounds that they're going to go with. You want to do that or do you want to go traditional? And I said, let's do it the new way. You know, do it. Let's have these like gorgeous spreads in there. And as long as they're page numbers, you can go back and look at what you're making. Yeah, exactly. So we just
end up with this
gorgeous spread.
It's gorgeous.
Which I think really helps you, help the reader conceptualize these things together. And it goes together. So it's not just like a dip, then a meatball, then a thing, you know, on and on through the book. It's much more experiential and a little bit more like a kind of like a Bible. Like, here are all of the things that you should know in this chapter, or that I hope to highlight in this chapter. You know, this is all the rice in the world dishes. These are the highlights.
I hope a trend in cooking at home is that there is less rigidity towards recipes and being exact about everything.
Right.
You know, we grew up learning how to cook without measuring everything.
Right.
Our parents, our moms and our grandmothers never measured anything. How did you make that, grandma? Oh, I just put a stuff together and it was there. Right?
Right.
And you know that from your mom, I'm sure. And you're
right? That's what I do now, depending on what I'm making.
And
I just wing it.
I see the ingredient list and it's a list. I don't look so much at the quantities and I get the sense from this that because of the simplicity of some of the recipes, there is that backbone to it. Anyone can do this.
Yeah.
And you don't have to think real hard about it.
Yeah.
And that's what cooking should be, but it's more organic, I think.
There's no intimidation. No one's worried about, you know, what am I going to do?
It's like Ratatouille. Exactly. Anyone can cook.
That's right.
It demystifies it.
It's demystifying the process. You're right.
I think people that grow up with the idea that you can wing it is a real gift. My mother was more of a cookbook follower, and my dad was much more of like, just throw spices and it'll be fine. And it's a real gift to have both, for sure. But it's a real gift to be able to just wander off. And I think that's hugely important. The book is definitely meant to inspire more than be like, these are the things you need to do. My hope is that it lowers the bar to having a cocktail party. You know, just have a cocktail party. It can be so easy. And we, at a certain point, things got, you know, really fancy where you feel like you need to do this, that, and the other thing to have people over. And this book is much more like, listen, you know, if you're going to make one of these, you know, maybe larger dishes in the book, you can just make that. And if you have like one or two good cocktails, no one's going to fault you and they're going to talk about your party and you'll all have a great time. And I think it's so important now to get together again and to get people together. And, you know, certainly for people starting out, you know, that don't even remember any of the old ways, whether they were formal or informal, the idea is just like, here's a few tools, make a couple things and have some people and call your friends and see if they'll come over. And that's my real hope with this. Just like, come on, people, let's talk to each other again over some drinks. I think it's healthy. I'm going to start the way people proselytize yoga or the, you know, the self-care. I mean, cocktail parties are real social care, right?
Now, my mom is no longer here, but she would be very disappointed that there's no Jell-O mold in this book. I'm sure you guys are all very upset about that too.
I couldn't find the cheese log. Where's the cheese
I didn't see
log?
A cheese log either. It was very odd. Yes. And what were you missing from the book from your past?
Now, remember, I've got the immigrant parents.
Yes, you do.
So my mom would not mess around with that kind of stuff. It'd be like,
it was a full meal.
I'm going to make pizza. I'm going to make stromboli. I'm going to make some arancini.
So nothing's changed.
You know, I'm going to do a big ziti, you know, whatever. She'd just go way over the top. But we would have cocktail parties. It would be, you know, a party, dinner, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I didn't have any of that stuff.
Paul Marco adding in the comment, seafoam salad.
Oh,
ew,
I don't know what that is, but it sounds really green or blue. I'm not sure.
That does not.
Or white. I'm not sure. Paul, throw us a little comment and tell us what that was.
I just hit him up with an.
I'm a huge fan of the Jell-O mold. Another book.
See, as men of a certain age right now, Jell-O only means one thing. You got a colonoscopy.
There you go.
Because that's all you could eat.
That's right.
And it has to be yellow. Yeah. And it can't be red and orange.
No dark Jell-O.
So, no dark Jell-O. Colonoscopy book. That should sell. It's a very specific demographic.
It could sell, sure. 50 and over. No. Yeah.
I'm not buying. Does it come with, what's that, propofol? What's that? Yeah,
exactly. Some propofol.
That's right. Knock out. Were there things that you wanted to put in the book but didn't make it? And why didn't they make it?
And by the way, the answer can be because then I wouldn't have bar menu two.
Yes, that can. That's an acceptable answer.
The next 100 plus recipes. Answer.
There's a number of dishes on the cutting room floor, and I think complexity was a real one. A book just takes on sort of a personality of its own, and you can go down into bread forever. And I was like, as someone who didn't cook that much bread, I get
so
it, true. But I don't. I wanted this, what I call the cracker, which anyone can do. It's a cracker, but instead of rolling it out and frustrating yourself with getting it onto a sheet, like really thin sheets on a pan, you just do it in a pasta roller. And then I wanted one flatbread to rule them all. Because as we know, there's thin crust flatbreads and thick crust flatbreads, and are you making pizza, and do you want it to rise, and all this stuff. So there's quite a few recipes that are just like, no, it's not. It starts to get to the point in the book where you just can tell. In fact, a number of recipes that I had in here in the beginning didn't make it to the end, which I credit with just having written this book for quite a long time. And as I went back, I was like, I love this. It's too quirky, or it just doesn't work, or it just doesn't fit in the theme. So a book kind of takes on a life of its own. And at a certain point, you're like, we have to close this chapter. I kind of know how big I want these chapters to be.
So you're going across the country. You're on a book tour, correct?
Yeah.
Probably spending a fair amount of time in hotel rooms.
Yes.
And probably some downtime. Have you been watching any TV? This is the What We Watch when we drink up. Podcast / live cast. Have you been watching any TV lately, Andre?
I have. I have been watching House of Dragons, which is fine.
I have too.
Yeah, my feeling on it is they did great. I really did fall in love with Millie Alcock. I think she's one of the great young actresses we've seen on the screen. It took me a little bit to get over moving past those episodes to, you know, that 10-year jump, because I feel like we really got hooked in with that beginning milieu and her. So let's move on to that. Then I did, you know, with one eye, I've been watching Rings of Power.
Why with one eye?
It has incredible production value, and I watch it for how great they have brought these things to life. But the storylines, there's always at least twice an episode where I'm like, this is terrible acting. This is not a good scene. It's really up and down. It may survive and it may catch fire. It is beautifully shot, and I don't think it's that different than the trilogy. So I think fans should be happy with it. And then I do watch a lot of sort of British procedurals. I love In the Line of Duty, which was this huge popular procedural, and I started rewatching that to look at some character development and script writing in that. It's nothing too interesting, so I want to hear from you guys what you're watching, so I'll have something to watch on the road.
Mike, where have you been on the TV world?
I started Rings of Power, and as a huge fan of Tolkien, but not someone that believes it's, you know, the Bible, the prequel book, The Silmarillion, is basically a loosely thatched piece of work that was more or less published after he passed away.
Right.
And that's Rings of Power. So there's a whole lot of unknown stuff that they're just kind of filling stuff in and adding characters and doing all these other things with, which I'm fine with, as long as they're well acted.
With the Tolkien family, with his grandson helping out.
Yeah, with their, you know, their family. And who knows? The family's cashing in for extra money. They don't care. The product, whatever. I don't really know. I'm not one of the Tolkiens. I didn't see a dime. But when you look at it, the production value is really high.
Yeah.
I agree. Some of the acting is a bit patchy. But the, you know,
I think it tells interesting stories. And that's all you want. Am I entertained? Am I not entertained?
Yeah.
You know, I just think it's actually pretty good. And I just found this new thing, Reginald the Vampire on Sci-Fi.
Well, yeah, how is it?
Which is,
what is
the
that?
Guy who plays Ned in the Spider-Man movies. So the guy in the chair, the new guy. He is bitten by Mario Van, and again, I really don't like the fact that it's Mario Van Peebles' son, because now I'm old enough to have seen the father, the son, and now the grandson all as adults working, because that doesn't, I can't possibly be the age I am, but he's there, and it's quite disturbing because Mario Van Peebles' son looks just like a young Mario Van Peebles. Shocking. Wow. How sons look like fathers. It almost looks like they're using the de-aging technology.
Wow.
To make Mario Van Peebles in the show, where you're looking and you're like, that's Mario. Oh, wait a second. That can't possibly be him. He's older than me. The first two shows have dropped, and it's actually kind of interesting to have a lot of the, you know, the trope about vampires and how they look and how they act and how they do this and how they do that. And then you have this guy who looks nothing like a typical vampire anybody's seen in the last 50 years. He's not a J. Crew vampire. And to see him now, and you're just like, it's just really funny. But that's really the couple things I've watched so far. And I finished She-Hulk. She-Hulk ended.
Oh, I still want to get back to that. I didn't like that first episode. We talked about that. I want to go back to it.
And in the comic books, she's a little bit like Deadpool, where she breaks the fourth wall. And the last episode, she didn't break the fourth wall. She shattered it. She tore it down. There's no longer any walls. The building collapsed. It was just unbelievable how many times she broke the fourth wall. But it was very entertaining. And she's very good to watch.
She's great. Tatiana Maslany.
Tatiana Maslany. She's very good.
Yep. Ange, what you got?
I'm not sure where Andor is. I'm caught up as of last week. I think there's just the 6 episodes. Are they going to come back for a second run, or was it?
Is it? You think it's over? Is it?
I don't know. I don't know.
Maybe it was, I don't even know if that was the last episode or not. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. But I've been watching that. What I love about the show, it is the most un-Star Wars-y Star Wars product so far.
That's true.
Which is great. It cuts out all the gobbledygook with the Force and all that nonsense. And it's, you know, part spy thriller, part heist movie, you know, part, I don't know, war movie. It's good. It's really good.
If I could just interject right now, we would like to disavow the gobbledygook comment about Star Wars.
Yes. The
continue.
George Lucas will be sending you a letter.
Yeah.
There's no gobbledygook in Star Wars. Sorry.
Nah, George Lucas got paid. It's Kevin Feige who might send me a letter.
He is the
bank. Or whoever's running the show.
He is the bank. We pay him.
So Andor, really good. I actually may have to go back and watch it again because there's little bits and pieces I didn't quite catch. I started Welcome to Wrexham.
Oh, yeah.
The documentary about Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds buying like the third oldest sporting club in the world.
In Wales.
In Wrexham, Wales. I watched the first episode. It's really good. And, you know, I like that he kind of ties it back to, and I'm not an Eagle. I'm not really a football person, but he ties it back to growing up in Philadelphia and how, you know, sports was very important and all this kind of stuff. And you know, how Wrexham is kind of like a down and out town, you know, post-industrial revolution, not doing so well. The team isn't doing so well. I think it's actually in like the lowest rung of the British divisions in football,
Premier League,
or soccer. Yeah. And, you know, they're trying to build it back up again and all this kind of stuff. So it's interesting. It's actually really, really well done. And it's a lot more serious than I thought it was going to be. Like, I was expecting a little bit of jokiness, but it's not by any stretch. And they focus a lot on the town and the team, at least in the early episodes.
Is that on Hulu?
Yeah, it's on Hulu. It's an FX show. So that's good so far. I want to keep going with that. Atlanta, season 4. This is the final season. And season 4 is better than season 3. I like that there's a lot more focus on the main characters. The storylines, I don't know, they're so-so, but the cast is great. And I just like watching them together. The four leads are just really, really good together. What else is going on? Let me think. That. I'm looking forward to The White Lotus.
That starts, I think, on Sunday, I think.
It starts on the 30th. Season 1 was great.
Yep.
Season 2, in Sicily, Michael Imperioli, F. Murray Abraham, Jennifer Coolidge, and I forget who else is in there, but I think F. Murray Abraham and Michael Imperioli are father and son.
It's gonna be great.
And it's going to be shot in Taormina, Sicily, so it should be interesting.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what else. Oh, Abbott Elementary, second season, right out of the gate, good show. A lot of fun. And again, Philly specific, which I find amusing. So it's kind of neat because they always drop the name of a restaurant or somewhere in Philly. And I always wonder if like the restaurant all of a sudden starts getting like crazy book reservations.
Right. People Google it. Where is that place?
There was one episode in season one where they talked about, you know, the restaurant Barada that was on 13th and Wharton. Well, they mentioned that at least 5 or 6 times in the restaurant. And I would love to call the restaurant just to ask them if they got flooded with reservations because it got mentioned on the show.
Free advertising.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what else there is. Yeah, that's it for now, as far as I know.
You made me think of something that I want to watch that's coming, and the trailer just came out, is I think season 3 or 4 of Mythic Quest with Rob McElhenney.
Oh, yeah.
On Apple Plus. And that's coming soon because I saw the trailer, which I'm excited about. That's really a fun show about a company that develops a game called Mythic Quest and the inner workings of the office space and how everyone works to create this game. It's very funny. I like Andre and Mike. I'm watching the two fantasy shows on Game of Thrones.
Not for me.
Yeah, I know that's not your thing. I actually like the Lord of the Rings better because there's more humor to it. The Game of Thrones one, and I know that these aren't the names of these shows. I can't think of them. I find it like overly dramatic and very political, and I can't keep track of everybody. And Paul Marco adds in What We Do in the Shadows, and yes, highly recommend season 4. It's beyond great. It is so good. It is so funny. I need to go rewatch one of the last episodes where they spoof a home improvement show. It is so freaking funny. So great.
Oh, I forgot one thing.
Go ahead.
Bad Sisters wrapped last week.
Sisters on Apple Plus.
Yeah, I got a soft spot for Sharon Horgan. She's just tremendous.
Amazing, amazing show. She is so great. They are so great. Bono's daughter, Eve Hewson, is great. The whole cast is amazing. And of course, the Gleason family is well represented in this show. Frank, which one? This
Brian.
Brian Gleason is in this one.
The Claflin.
Right. The Claflin family. And I want to give props to a show I'm in the middle of called Reboot on
that's a good one.
Hulu. Yep. With Paul Reiser, Rachel Bloom, the guy who has three names.
Keegan-Michael Key.
That's again. That guy.
Johnny Knoxville.
Johnny Knoxville. Judy Greer.
Judy Greer.
It's about a rebooting.
Oh, Judy Greer's great.
Rebooting of a TV show on Hulu from the 90s, and they bring back the original cast, and you see the inner workings of the show and how the old timers from the cast from the behind the scenes work together with the new timers in the writer's room. And you see all the PC and non-PC dialogue. It is beyond hilarious. I'm a huge Paul Reiser fan. I've been a fan of his since the 80s, seeing him in comedy clubs. And he's just spot on in this show. And Rachel Bloom is she's a gift. And it is so well written. And it's not safe for your children be under what, 16, maybe 18. highly recommend it. And it's only a half hour. Really good. I think they're in episode 7 or 8 right now. I'm not sure how many episodes are going to come. So that's what I've been watching. And plus lots of baseball these days. And now hockey's here.
NBA's back.
NBA's back. Hockey's back. Football's here. The calendar of TV is rather exploding. So, Andre, you got a lot of stuff to watch when you're on the road, watch in hotel rooms when you're not drinking. So where does your trip take you the rest of the way here?
I'm starting out in Philly, going down to D.C., then I'm heading west to Denver, Seattle, Dallas, Charleston, New Orleans. Super exciting to do that this time.
Are you doing bookstores, bars? Where are you going?
It's a mix. I'm doing a lot of the great independents, and then in a few cities, I'm doing fun venues. So, like in Dallas, I'm doing a bar called Strange Ways, which is named after the Smiths album.
Very cool.
I've known them for a while, and this is sort of a dream come true to do an event with them. And then in New Orleans, I'm doing an event with the Great Cochon, which is awesome. It turns out their CDC was a Batman fan, so we started talking through that. I always, especially with these books that are drinking, you know, bookstores sometimes have a hard time serving drinks. It's really fun to be experiential. So if I can move it to another venue and have the bookstore come along to a new venue, I try to do that. It just makes it a little bit different. Although this is more of a traditional cookbook, so I'm still doing some, you know, just kind of cookbook bookstores as well for this one.
Have you been asked anywhere to make a cocktail or cook?
You know, this is my first tour where I have a stylist in a couple cities, because I basically land and I'm either doing TV or doing demos in stores.
Whoa. So you're cooking.
It'll be really fun. I want to be able to offer a drink to people. Everyone has a better time. It's more memorable. So I'm doing drinks in most of the stops, I would say, that don't have a restaurant and are making drinks anyway. I'm definitely doing a little demo. This tour has quite a bit of TV on it, so I'm excited to do that. I did some TV on the last one too, which ended up being really fun. It's always a lot of work for like 3 minutes, right? A few of the spots were really just fun, and it's just all part of the thing. You know, it's part of the tour. So you get out there and you do it, and it's fun.
So where are we going after Bar Menu? What's coming up after this?
Yes, the old Darlington lineup is early spring, the Big Lebowski cocktail book.
Ooh.
25th.
Oh, my.
Darlington abides. 25th
anniversary of the film. That was a really fun email or phone call to get to do that. A new press, so that's on Quarto. It's gone really well, really well. It's really fun. It's illustrated by a woman in Amsterdam, and she knocked out of the park. I wrote the thing, and I open it up, and I laugh out loud. It's, the illustrations are so funny. So it's a very joy, like the movie. It's smart and joyful. I'm thrilled with it. So that's spring. Fall brings another Booze and Vinyl holiday edition. So a little bit
spicy, oh my,
but all holiday music.
Oh, that's awesome. That'd be fun.
Really fun. I think it's going to have sort of a sparkly 1940s kind of vibe to it, I imagine. I shoot that in Philly actually this December. And then out to 24, I am working on a cowboy cocktail book, which is also...
Oh, how fun.
Yeah, it's unexpectedly fun. I didn't want it to be cowboy inspired or stupid, right? So, or too glib. So I've done a ton of research on that. It's why I was down in San Antonio doing research on that. It's going to be quite historical. You know, the cowboy era is post-Civil War. We know what they were drinking. It kind of coincides with the Gilded Age when cocktails got going. We actually know some of the cocktails of the famous gamblers at that time, during that era. So another super cool one. Not your typical cocktail book, right? Like cowboy era, Western, but cocktails. But it turns out, you know, the cocktail was really born in California in the 1850s during the Gold Rush. And I know a lot more about this than I did in the beginning, you know, before I started writing it, but spread from California in the 1850s, actually moved to Denver and then Kansas City by the 1870s, and then spread east and actually landed in New York later. And actually Jerry Thomas, who, you know, is the famous author of the first American cocktail book, went from California and went east to New York, where he opened a bar. So interesting book. And those are the three on the plate. It's been a busy year. I'm actually pretty much wrapping up all three before I go on tour here.
Wow.
Do you have any grand ideas percolating up there of things you want to... I have a couple for you, but of things you're thinking about doing for the future?
Yes, I'm in talks with TCM again to do
a Christian
book, which I'm super excited about because I love the history. I love that era. We're talking about doing a book that's pre-code, so 1930 to 1934. I'm super excited by that because I really like the stuff that I could sink my teeth into and do a lot of research. and watch a lot of movies.
I think you got to do a Me TV cocktail book.
A Me TV? Oh, yeah. MASH and Adam's Family.
Hogan's right. Heroes, oh. Carol Burnett Show. That's where I am right A-team. Now. I just got to keep rolling those out. A little Me TV.
Does he have to build his own still for the MASH cocktails?
If that helps, sure. Otherwise.
And do you have to be in like an army tent?
Wow. You mean you're really speaking to my era? I mean, Hogan's Heroes was what I watched.
There you go.
You know, when I was Hogan. As a kid, it was like Hogan's Heroes is going to be on.
Hogan's Heroes in Hollywood Squares. Being That's sick right. was great. It was absolutely the best.
By the way, I had one more cocktail. I made the highball in there, which is
oh, like the Tokyo.
Oh, no more ice anymore, but delicious. Yeah. You can't go wrong with a highball.
No,
you really can't.
No. Nope.
You have a little Japanese whiskey in there, or what do you?
I do.
Yeah.
Yep. Andre, we love this book. I speak for the YouTube boys. I love it. I think it's great. I have gone crazy with the little post-it note things of things I am going to. It's kind of fuzzy. Dude.
What's next?
Like all the other books I have of yours, and dive through this thing and make a bunch of these cocktails because I think recipes because I think it really speaks to where we are in the bar culture now, cocktail culture about robust flavors, fun things to do. Not overly complicated. Yep. And when we're bringing people to our homes, we don't want to just order pizza in.
Right.
We want to have something a little more unique and fun. And these are great recipes to do that.
Oh,
and this is an exciting book to me. This is so great because I'm tired of like these overly complicated cookbooks that just,
I know.
It's like 47 ingredients. I can't do this.
One of the things I really like about the book is the book gives you a time of day reference. Is this something that's going to be before dinner? Is this something you're going to do as dinner? Is this something you're going to do after dinner? So it isn't like heavy everything. It's you could do light apps. You could do a little bit more. You could do heavy apps. And this could take the place of a meal, or it could be the thing you have after you've already had a meal. So if people are coming to your house at 7, you're set. If they're coming at your house at 9, you're set. There's a whole bunch of things in there. And I really like the way it's structured because it gives you a little bit of everything. And you can... Like the way you said it, like you went kind of old school with like, this is meat, this is chicken, this is, but it gives you a little something to pull out of each one, depending on your need. And it's at the fingertips, you find it right away. It's readily available. I think it's really well done. I mean, it looks beautiful. The recipes seem, I made two things. I'm shocked. And a cocktail. I'm shocked.
I am impressed, Mike. I am very
normally
impressed.
If I pour whiskey in a glass, I call it a cocktail if I throw an ice in. Angelo tells me that's not a cocktail, but whatever.
It's a clean like glass. It's a cocktail.
I don't like him. But it's really well done. It really is.
As I've gotten older, I've gotten very lazy, right? I used to do these complicated recipes too, and now I want to make sure that if I'm sharing a recipe, it's someone who's like me. They just want to make something good, but they don't really want to go nuts. I mean, there's some stuff in here that is quite process-driven and nuts, but in general, it's pretty easy. And I snuck a few recipes in there because this happens a lot where people are already in your house. You're already drinking. You don't really want to hit Grubhub and you don't really want to go out.
That's right.
And it's like, one of my go-tos for that is like spaghetti quinoa or something, right? Mm-hmm. If you have, dark, soy sauce in the house, you're ready to go. Dark vinegar, Chinese, a few Chinese ingredients, you're ready to go. And that's the fun. It's like, what is at hand? What makes this easy?
Yep,
I agree. You can make any of these things and be impress your friends, impress your family, and have a good time.
Yeah.
That ultimately, that's what it's about, right?
And it's all flavor. It's ingredients and spices you had in the house.
Yep.
Flavor.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Bringing up, it's just it's really well done.
Thank you.
No, I love it. I'm excited, and I'm excited for you because this. This is so you. This book is just a reflection of who you are.
Right. It's going to be good then.
It is. Yeah. I think,
I'm glad that comes across because this one is probably the closest to my heart of all of them that I've done in a way. One is my first cookbook, but it's something that I've been doing for so many years. So I really wanted to sort of impart, basically I say in the intro, like I'm just sharing what I do. I hope that works for you too. That's kind of the whole thing behind the book. And then, sharing some fun ingredients. And I feel like I can get away with this now because the home pantry, as you were saying, is so much better. you know, I've heard from a couple of people like, wow, you have to go a lot of get a lot of stuff for this book. I'm like, not really. And it's all available, you know, online now, if you have to, you know. But I think even in a reasonably sized market, you can find all the ingredients in here, which is really a brave new world, right? I mean, I used to, as a kid, we used to drive to the next town over to get Indian ingredients to cook. And now, you know, it's everywhere. So it's really a brave new world. I hope people take advantage of what, it, you know, we live around. We have so many spices available to us now compared to 20 years ago.
This book, much like the other ones, I mean, you know, like you said, you put a lot of yourself into it. All the books are approachable, whether it's the Booze and Vinyl or this, you know, it's, you know, your personality coming through. The only downside to these books is that we've all been home making our own stuff and making our own drinks and, you know, up in our game. When we go to a bar, you feel a little disappointed.
I agree with you. In some bars. Yeah.
Some bars. Right. But yeah, you know, you go to a bar and it's like you said, all right, fries, that's great. But you know, it's just a bag of Orida that you threw in the fryer. I mean, come on, man.
Yeah. Some bars haven't done it. They haven't stepped up.
Nope.
I think we're representative in a way of how the rest of the country is too, that people are going and, you know, during the pandemic, they learned whiskey or they learned, you know, wine or they learned, certainly more Americans know more about Amaro than they did even 5 years ago. So yeah.
Oh my God. So true.
And I think, you know, the bar is being allowed to sell cocktails and someone like Drizzly emerging,
right,
where they'll deliver it right to your door in most states.
Right.
It becomes one of those, like, even during lockdown, I could get a serious cocktail from a serious bar and the ingredients to make that cocktail later and experiment and figure out what I wanted to do. And again, up your game.
Yeah.
And if you're going to up your game with the drinks, you up your game with your food. And how do I do that? I got to get a good cookbook that ups the game. So I'm not just making fries or I'm not just ordering pizza. I'm doing something else. And I think this really does that.
Andre Darlington has been our guest on What We Watch When We Drink. We can't thank him enough on his very, very busy schedule, crossing the highways and byways of America, talking the beauty of his new book, Bar Menu. Publisher is runningpress.com. We should mention those guys, right? And we'll get on his website. What's your website?
Just my name, andredarlington.com.
And I'm guessing all the locations for your stops are there, right?
Yep.
And maybe if you're in the city where he is, stop in, say hi, get an autograph, talk cocktails, talk food, and you'll really enjoy it because this is a really fun book. Andre, we cannot thank you enough again. We love you when you come on, and you have now beaten Charo and Don Rickles, I believe.
it's really just Steve Allen and Tony Randall ahead of him. After that, he'll be top.
Maybe they are ahead of him. You're right. There is some question about the scorecard. Yes, right.
I got to be back. I'm back.
You'll have to be back for book number 9, I believe, is the next one, right?
Yes, next in spring. It'll be not in March, so we can do an early winter.
All right. Andre, thank you so much. All right, gentlemen, we did it again. We were live on Booze Dancing TV. We had a great guest. Get us out of here.
Play us off.
All right, let's do the end credits. Cheers, boys.
Cheers.
Cheers, Andre.
If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com. And if you have any questions, comments, show, or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.